We're looking at Genesis chapter 20 tonight, and I have to confess that Genesis chapter 20 has always been one of the most difficult chapters in the Old Testament to me, personally, because of the fact that it seems as though Abraham is blessed in spite of, or in some ways it seems almost as though he's blessed because of, a sin that he commits in this chapter. And that seems to go contrary to the nature of God to allow someone to be blessed because of sin in their life. But of course, we understand as well that sometimes circumstances just are what they are. And sometimes in the world around us, we see people who are in sin, but seem to have, in a material sense at least, any number of blessings. They're wealthy, they have all the finest of everything, they seem to have a good family, and lots of friends, and popularity, and all kinds of things that seem to be going for them. And of course we have to realize that that's not always all there is, and sometimes we can't see under the surface. Of course, as we look at this chapter as well, one of the things that we have to realize is God's ability to work through even the bad things that happen in the world, even the sins in our lives as Christians, that He can work through the things that we do that we shouldn't to bring good from it in the long run. And we think of Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, all things work together for good for them that love the Lord and are the called according to His purpose. But sometimes it's hard to swallow when, especially with your children, and you try to teach them that lying's bad, and then they say, well, what about this chapter where Abraham gets away with it, so to speak. And so let's look at this chapter and at least let's learn some lessons from it. Even if we don't always understand everything and why God allowed the things that He did, we know that He was right in what He did and the way that He did things. And perhaps there was more going on here in this situation than we even realized. Perhaps there was a test of sorts going on for other people that were involved in this situation as well. But Abraham's on the move again. It seems like Abraham can't stay in one place for very long. Even though God wanted him to leave his country and go to the land that He showed him, but then even after he gets there, he's moving around constantly. Part of that may have to do with the fact that he was involved in the animal business. And unlike today, where they ship the hay in, or bring the grain in, or pipe the water in, during that day and age, if you had animals, you had to go where the green grass was. You had to go where there was water. You couldn't wait for it to come to you. And so it was that Abraham is moving again. And this time he goes to an area with a city, or an area called Gerar, or Gerar, depending on how you want to pronounce that G at the beginning of it. And he settles in that area for a time, and there he tells people that Sarah is his sister. Does that sound familiar? Sounds a lot like what he did back when they were in Egypt, back in Genesis 11. And so he tells everybody that she's his sister. She tells everybody as well, yes, that's my brother. Well, what do you expect is going to happen? Now remember that Sarah is 90 years old by this time, or 89 anyway, heading toward 90. And as an 89-year-old woman, she's so attractive that the king wants to take her as his wife. Now, I don't know about you, but that seems pretty unusual to me, that somebody who's nearly 90 years old, not to say that you're not attractive, but most kings are looking for some sweet young thing. They're not looking for somebody that's 89. And yet here's this king. He's the king. He could have any woman he wants. Well, who does he want? He wants Abraham's wife. Well, he doesn't know that it's Abraham's wife. Remember, Abraham and Sarah have both said they're brother and sister. And so he takes her to be his wife. But God comes to him, this man's name, this king, his name is Abimelech. Now there are other Abimelechs in the Bible. This is the first one. There will be others later on. In Judges there's an Abimelech. But this particular Abimelech, he's the king. And God comes to him in a dream. You know, sometimes we have thought that, oh well, you know, God spoke to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he's leading those people. And sometimes we think God didn't have any dealings with anybody else in the world. But that's not the case. During this time, God had dealings with a lot of different people. Remember we read about Melchizedek. He was a priest of God, but he wasn't in the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we remember Pharaoh even had, he was warned about Sarah because he took her as wife. Well, here now Abimelech's taking her to be his wife, and he's warned by God in a dream. So God was actively involved in people's lives during this time. This is, of course, still part of the patriarchal age. And God dealt with people. He continued to deal with people even who were not Israelites and who were not under the law of Moses, even on hundreds of years later. Remember Nebuchadnezzar? He had a dream too. You remember Pharaoh with Joseph had the dream. Nebuchadnezzar is way later. That's after the law of Moses is enacted, and yet still, God is still dealing with the leaders of some of the people through dreams. And here he comes to Abimelech in a dream. I want to think about what's going on here. Here's a man who is taking a woman that he believes to be available to be a wife. And he believes that because she and her husband have lied about who she is. And why did Abraham lie about that? This isn't the first time. He's done it before. And in each case, we see that he's not trusting God yet. I want us to learn something from Abraham here and this situation. You know, sometimes we think of conversion as, well, I studied the Bible, I learned what I need to do, I repented of my sins, I was baptized, I became a Christian, and wow, that was conversion. I was converted. But the conversion process doesn't stop just right then. And it's like, that's it. Now, everything I used to be, I'm not anymore. And I've got all my sins rid of. I've got all my temptations. I'm never going to have any struggles again. It doesn't work that way. Becoming what God wants us to be is a continual, lifelong process. Here's Abraham. He's been struggling all along with becoming what God wants him to be. He's failed on more than one occasion in being what God wants him to be. But he hasn't quit. He's still growing. He's still working. And that's why Abraham is such a great example to us. Because we see someone who wasn't perfect, who didn't have it all together all automatically from the start, who still had struggles with sin, and in this case, struggles with the same sin. We see these two recorded cases with Pharaoh and Abimelech. One wonders how many other times they lied about who they were. It seems to be a pattern here, and in fact, we'll see later on that it is a pattern. It's what they did continually. But at some point, he's got to get beyond that. He's got to quit doing that. And he will. But part of fully trusting God is growing to that point where we fully trust God. And we'll see a little later on that Abraham is going to reach that point where his faith in God is strong enough that he's willing to risk everything for him. But at this point, he's not. Just like in the case with Pharaoh, he was afraid that they'd kill him and take her. His fear of death, his concern for his own well-being allowed him to let his wife be in a situation where she could have been taken advantage of. Now, fortunately, in that case, as well as in this one, God protected her from that situation and protected Abraham as well. But again, God has just promised Abraham that within the next year, Sarah is going to be pregnant and she's going to have your child. You and Sarah are going to have a baby within a year's time. And then here he is, again, not trusting God enough to protect him. You trust God enough to let a 90-year-old woman and a 100-year-old man have a baby, but you don't trust him enough to keep you safe when you're traveling. You see, the trust, he's not fully there yet. He's still struggling with it. Well, all of us have areas in our lives where we still struggle, where we still aren't fully putting God where He needs to be. And if we think that we don't, then we're deceiving ourselves. Any of us who think, well, I'm everything that God wants me to be, well, how foolish is that for us to think that? John tells us in 1 John, if we say we have no sin, we're liars and the truth is not in us. And then again he says, if we say we have no sin, we make Him a liar and His Word is not in us. So we have to first acknowledge that, yeah, there's some areas where I struggle, where I'm not doing what I ought to do. And then, of course, we have to work on those areas. We can't just say, oh, yeah, I'm not perfect, but neither is anybody else, so I'm good enough, I'm better than some people, or I'm even better than most people, so that's okay. Instead, when we find those areas, when we recognize those areas, and of course recognizing them sometimes is kind of hard because the areas where we're failing to trust God are some of the areas where we have some blind spots, where we're not seeing our faults accurately sometimes. And that's easy to do. But here we are, Abimelech has this dream now. Because Abraham and Sarah have lied, God has to come to Abimelech and warn him in a dream. He says, you're a dead man. Because the woman you've taken for a wife, she's somebody else's wife already. And Abimelech, it says, had not come near her yet. So, you know, they hadn't gotten married. They certainly hadn't consummated the relationship yet. He hadn't come near her yet. And so he asks God the question. He says, well, wait a minute, God, are you going to slay a righteous nation? And then he says, didn't he say to me, she's my sister, and didn't she say, yeah, he's my brother? And then he goes on to say, in the innocency and integrity of my heart and hands have I done this. In other words, he says, I thought she was free to be married. I didn't know. And we learn something from Abimelech here. Now fortunately, God warned him before he committed this grievous sin of adultery. But do we realize how often in life people commit sin in the integrity of their heart and in the innocency of their hands because they believed a lie? How often do people do that? They believe a lie that is taught that they think they're doing what's right. They're doing what they've been taught is right or what they believe to be right. And yet, it's not right because they've believed a lie. We see that all the time in the religious world where people generation after generation are taught false doctrines. And they believe that false doctrine. Now, that doesn't mean that God's going to excuse that. It's our responsibility to find out the truth. But we see the power of a lie and the danger of a lie. It doesn't matter why you believed the lie. Believing the lie can be deadly to you. And we've got to watch out. We've got to beware. But since Abimelech had not touched her, see, Abimelech was not a wicked person. He wasn't going to take another man's wife away from him and try to take her for himself. He had integrity. He had a moral code. In fact, it seems in this case that God's chosen one, Abraham, had less of a moral code than the fellow who was the heathen in this case. Well, sometimes we all get ourselves in situations where when we get involved in a sin, we're not living up to the integrity that God expects us to have in our lives. And somebody else who may not even be a Christian in that situation may have more integrity than we do. We've got to watch out for that. We've got to get that integrity back and do what's right. But Abimelech was not wicked. He had integrity. He acted innocently, thinking that here's a woman who's free to marry. Oh, believing a lie can certainly be devastating, even to an innocent person. Of course, God tells him that he knew that Abimelech didn't have any evil thoughts, any ulterior motive, that he was doing it innocently, and that's why God warned him. God protected Abimelech as well as protecting Sarah and Abraham in this situation. And so God stops him before the sin could occur. And God warns him about it. And he says, now you give her back to her husband. Now Abimelech's integrity truly is tested. Now Abimelech knows who she is. He knows she's someone else's wife. Now the question is, what is he going to do about it? You know, all of us are in those situations from time to time where we didn't know something was true. We didn't know a particular situation, how it was, and maybe we did something innocently. But then we gain the knowledge of the truth. And then we have to answer to God for what we do with that knowledge. Do we accept it and act on it? The story is told of the man who ran a dry goods store back in the Old West. And, of course, in those days, on their counter, they'd have a measuring stick measured out there. And he had his measuring stick there, you know, to measure the cloth or what have you for the things that they were selling, measure the rope, whatever it was, to sell it by the yard or by the foot. Well, he ran that dry goods store for many years. And then one day he died, and his son began to run that dry goods store. Now his son continued to use that same measuring stick that his father had used that he had drawn on the counter there. But about that time, the government decided that they needed to standardize all of the measurements in the United States, and so they sent an agent around with a yardstick to go around to all these places and check to make sure that everyone's measurements were accurate. And when they came to this dry goods store, they found that this man's measurement was wrong. He had been cheating people. His father, before him, had been cheating people because he was giving them less than what they thought they were getting and less than what they were paying for. Now this young man had just been running the store a couple of years, and he said, but my father drew this on here, and he used it for all those years. Doesn't matter. It wasn't accurate. It needs to be changed. It needs to be made the right length. Now see, this young man has choice. He can't change what his father did all those years. His father's dead and gone. He doesn't know whether his father put that measurement there intentionally to cheat people, or whether it was an accident, or whether he thought it was the right length. He doesn't know why his father did what he did. And as far as he's concerned, it really doesn't matter why his father did what he did. The question for that young man is, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep that faulty measurement and keep cheating people now that you know that it's wrong? Or are you going to correct it? Further than that, are you going to go back and refund a little bit of money to those people who've been buying stuff from you for the last couple of years thinking they were getting something that they weren't? Or are you just going to ignore it and keep going with things the way they are? You see, all of us at one time or another in our life have done things that we didn't even know were wrong. And not that God will necessarily excuse that of us, but one of the things that Paul says of his life was that one of the reasons that God gave him the mercy that he did and showed him the grace that he did was because he had done those things with a clear conscience. He thought he was doing what was right. And when it was showed to him that what he was doing wasn't right, he fixed it. He turned around and he served God 100% the direction he should be going. But what about us? Are we going to keep holding on because, well, Mama always did it this way, Daddy always did it, my grandparents, well, it doesn't matter what they did. The question is, when we study the Bible and when we learn the truth, what are we going to do with it? And people will sometimes say, well, but if this is what the Bible teaches, then my grandmama or my mama or whoever, and they were wrong and they may be lost. And are you saying they're lost? And the question comes, if they weren't lost, if they were saved, would they want you to do what is right according to the Bible so you could be saved? Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, what if they were lost? What if they were doing what was wrong? And what if they're not going to make it to heaven? Do you think they'd still want you to do what is right so you could go to heaven? If they loved you, they would. Nobody who loved another person would ever want that person to suffer an eternity in hell. And so when we look at these things, as we discover the truth, we can't change what our ancestors did or didn't know or what they did or didn't do. But each and every one of us has to answer to God for what we do with the knowledge that we have. And each and every one of us has to be accountable to God for whether we studied the Scriptures for ourselves instead of depending on those things that we had heard generation after generation. Did we go back and search those Scriptures for ourselves? Well, Abimelech's now in this situation. He didn't know she was married, but now he does. So what you going to do now, Abimelech? You going to try to keep her as a wife? Now, Abimelech, first thing in the morning, he calls all his servants together and he says, here's what happened. And he said, I'm going to return her. And he called Abraham in. And, of course, God had also said that Abraham was a prophet and that if Abimelech would give his wife back, he'd pray for him. It almost seems like God was testing Abimelech in this situation a little bit. And so he calls Abraham in verse 9, and he asks the question that I can only imagine I would ask in a similar situation. I hope I'm never in a similar situation, but if I ever was, I'd ask this question. He says, what have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and my kingdom this great sin? Why did you do this to me? Why did you lie to me about this? You could have killed me. Why did you do this? And that's the question Abimelech has. He said, why was it? Now, notice, Abimelech gives us a good... He doesn't delay. He doesn't say, well, you know, give me a few days to think about it. He doesn't try to blame others. He doesn't say, well, it's so-and-so's fault because they told me. And no, he accepts the situation as it is. And he acts on it. He doesn't try to make excuses for it. Well, I'm the king. I can have her anyway if I want to. I'll just kill her husband and then she can marry me anyway. He doesn't do that. He doesn't try to make excuses. He doesn't try to justify it. He accepts it and he gives her back to Abraham. But he just wants to know, Abraham, why did you do this to us? What was it? And he even asks, what did you see here that you've done this thing? Were you trying to bring God punishment on us for some reason? He's already been told that Abraham is a prophet. And so maybe he thinks that God is somehow trying to bring punishment on him and his people. And so he asked Abraham, why did you do this? What did you see that made you do this to us? What did I do to deserve this? Isn't that the question we ask? Well, of course, when it comes to some sins, we know exactly what we did to deserve the difficulties that we find ourselves in. We brought it on ourselves. But sometimes we have done things without knowledge. We say, well, what did I do to deserve this? And sometimes we don't always understand. And it takes a while for us to realize what sin is doing to us in our lives. You notice here again, you remember the promise God gave Abraham? You're going to be a blessing to all nations. All the nations of the earth are going to be blessed through you. Well, so far, as we've been through this, Abraham hadn't been much of a blessing to anybody yet. Here he is again. He's being more of a curse than a blessing to Abimelech and his people. He was to Pharaoh and his people. Time and again. And yet, see, we see this because of Abraham's selfishness. Because of his own selfish desires, he's bringing pain and sorrow on others. Selfishness brings pain and sorrow. It always does. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it will bring pain and sorrow. Selfishness always brings pain and sorrow to those around. He had the opportunity to be a blessing, but he's being a curse instead. And yet in that, again, we see how God can take something and turn it around. All of us here today, looking back thousands of years on this situation, realize God did turn this around and Abraham did bring forth that son and the descendancy all the way down to Christ, and that did bring a blessing for all of us today. Sometimes it takes a while for God's plan to unfold. And right now, it doesn't seem at this point as though Abraham is being much of a blessing to anyone. Well, Abraham answers Abimelech's question. Why did you cause all these problems? Well, Abraham says, because I fought. You know, sometimes we get into a lot of trouble when instead of trusting God, we start thinking. Man's thinking, and woman's thinking for that matter too, but human beings thinking instead of trusting God causes all kinds of problems. But the problem here, Abraham thought. And now notice what he thought. He thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, verse 11 says, and they will slay me for my wife. In other words, they'll kill me and take my wife. That's the same thing he thought in Egypt, too, wasn't it? Sometimes you say, what? Will they never learn? You know, you look at the Israelites and all the mistakes they made and God punished them and then bring them back and punish them. Well, won't they ever learn? And you look at the disciples and Jesus constantly having to tell them the same things over and over. Well, won't they ever learn? Be careful. There's a good chance there's some area of your life and that I have some area in my life where I'm going through that same cycle. And I'm sure God's asking that same question. Won't he ever learn? Won't she ever learn? Will we just continue to do the same thing over and over again? Will I ever learn to trust God and do what he said? Or will I keep thinking for myself and getting myself into trouble? Which will it be? The choice is ours. But we've got to choose to follow God. He assumed that these people were wicked murderers. He didn't even know them. He had just moved there, and the first thing he did was start lying to the people. Because he thought they were wicked murderers. He thought they'd kill him. And then Abraham tries to justify the lie. Well, you know, she really is my sister. She's my half-sister. We had the same father, but a different mother. And he tries to justify the lie. Again, Abimelech seems to show more integrity than Abraham. Abimelech didn't try to justify. He just said, hey, I didn't know. Now that I know, I'm give his wife back. And here's what, in fact, we look at what Abimelech does in verse 14. He's going to give and give and give. But notice, we talked earlier about the pattern. In verse 13, we see that pattern revealed. He says, God caused me to wander from my father's house, and I said to her, that's to Sarah, this is your kindness which you shall show me. At every place where we go, say, he is my brother. See, this wasn't just a one-time thing. Abraham had an arrangement with Sarah to protect his own skin. He was willing to sacrifice her integrity and virtue. He was willing to give her away to another man to protect his own life. And that was his plan. Everywhere we go, Sarah, you tell him that I'm your brother. Don't tell him I'm your husband. You tell him I'm your brother. Everywhere. See, this is not just a one-time event or even a two-time event. This was the pattern of Abraham's life. And even given that, then this is the part that's kind of hard to swallow. It seems like God ought to reprove Abraham and tell him, straighten up, quit lying about Sarah, tell people she's your wife, I'll take care of you, I'll protect you, you ought to know that. But instead, here's what happens. Abimelech took sheep and oxen, men servants, women servants, and gave them to Abraham, and gave him his wife back too. And, as if that wasn't enough, he said to Sarah, look, I'm going to give your brother 1,000 pieces of silver to prove that everything's okay. That's the hard part. It seems like Abraham kind of got blessed for lying, doesn't it? I mean, he got sheep and oxen, he got his wife back, he got 1,000 pieces of silver. And before, when he had done this to Pharaoh, Pharaoh sent him away and said, get out of my land, I don't want you around here. Go. Get away. But Abimelech, man, this guy, what an attitude this guy has. How gracious he is. What a good king he must have been. Notice what he says. After the man nearly got him killed by God, nearly got him struck dead, here's what he says. After giving the wife back, giving him sheep, oxen, servants, 1,000 pieces of silver, and then he says, my land's before you. Pick anywhere you want. You can live anywhere you want to live. Abimelech's a pretty good guy. I mean, this guy. Wow. Can you imagine responding that way in this situation? It'd be hard for me to want to be very nice to the fellow who did this to me. But Abimelech's a good fellow. I don't know what happened with Abimelech. I don't know everything about his relationship with God. I know he said he was righteous, that his nation was a righteous nation. I know he said he had integrity and innocence, and God accepted it. God said, I know that's true. I don't know. Maybe Abimelech's going to be in heaven. I don't know. Boy, I'd sure hate to think that a fellow with as good a heart as he had, and who was as kind and merciful as he was under these circumstances, I'd sure hate to think that he didn't make it. We don't know a lot about, you know, how God judged those people back under the patriarchal age. We know a little bit more about the Mosaic age, and we certainly know under the Christian age what God's laws are that we have to conform to be saved. But maybe Abimelech will be there. I sure hope so. But he gives that money, and Abraham prays to God, and God heals Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bore children. And it says, because the Lord had closed up the wombs of the whole house of Abimelech, not just his wife. All his servants, none of his servants could have children because of Sarah during this time. Now, I don't know how long of a time period this lasted. It couldn't have been a real long time. It was certainly less than a year's time. But it's an amazing thing what God can do and what God will allow and how God will turn even a sinful thing, even a wicked thing. God can turn it around and use it for good. And he did that here. He used this as an opportunity to go to Abimelech in that dream. Used it as an opportunity. Hopefully, we never read about Abraham and Sarah lying about who they are after this. Maybe he got them straightened out on that as a result of this situation. But he got them a place to live. They could live anywhere in Abimelech's land that they wanted to live. It's an amazing thing how God can turn even things that Satan would want to use to destroy. God can turn it for good. Are we like Abimelech? Are we willing when we find out that something is a sin, that something is wrong, something maybe that we've been doing or maybe we're about to do, and we find out that's wrong, are we willing to stop in our tracks and turn around and go the other way? Are we willing to do that? Abimelech's a good example in this chapter. I hope all of us will be a little more like Abimelech in the future. Merciful, forgiving, willing to turn from sin and not press on. Some of us would say, well, I've gone this far. I might as well go on and finish it. We don't need to have that attitude. As soon as we realize we're headed towards sin, as soon as we realize we're headed the wrong direction, we need to turn it around. We need to get back to God as fast as we can. Let's be more like Abimelech. Tonight, if perhaps you haven't been like that, perhaps you've been allowing the sin to build up in your life, you just kind of let it go. It's not a big deal. It's just little sins. It's just a few. It's not as bad as somebody else's or whatever the case may be, and tried to justify them like Abraham tried to justify his lie. You need to repent of that. You need to turn away from that and turn back to God. If you have a need to respond tonight, please do so as we stand and as we sing.